News, sports, weather from Dr. Bill Williams, traffic info from Kane, and one of the Gulf Coast's most familiar voices. It's Mobile Mornings with Dan Brennan and Dalton Arwig.
Good morning from Dan and Dalton. Turning up your voice, 343-0106. You want to give us a call? We're also checking on the text line. It's been pretty active this morning. Mm-hmm. And we will also go to the app and see if we've got some voicemails there, some talkback features. The talkback feature. So you're not going to believe who came to the... How did this happen? It would be in that file.
Okay.
Who came to the defense of Lindsey Graham after that less than classy tweet from a Democratic operative in Rhode Island? She something about it, like Lindsey got COVID, and then she tweeted something to the effect of, "Oh, you know, hope he doesn't die or whatever." I forget what it was all about.
She said, "Here it is. It's wrong to hope he dies from COVID, right? Asking for a friend."
Kate Coyne McCoy is the strategist Democrat up in Rhode Island. The tweet was met with fierce backlash. Later, she deleted it. She said, "I made a mistake, used poor judgment, which I obviously regret." I think that is probably a statement a lot of Twitter. A lot of people on Twitter have said, like,
Well, basically, that was all of Biden's nominees for the different federal government roles. Mm-hmm. Like, they got up there for confirmation, and all the Republicans just rolled out all of their tweets. Mm-hmm. And they're just like, what about this one? Hey, poor judgment.
Yep.
What about this tweet? Poor judgment on that one. That's kind of the standard line, right?
Right. And so poor judgment is what she said. Black Lives Matter, Rhode Island.
Wow.
So that's probably one of the smaller Black Lives Matter coalitions because it's Rhode Island.
They've marched the whole state.
They have made a statement against the tweeter. And let it be known that they strongly were against what she did. The BLM PAC followed up other calls for her resignation, with the group saying that the comment was extremely distasteful and insensitive. Regardless of political affiliation, the disregard for human life is unacceptable and should not be tolerated anywhere within any political party, the statement said. How can we trust someone with such blatant disregard for human life with the will of Rhode Island voters? So anyway, I just thought that was, you know, talk about politics making strange bed partners. Yeah. Black Lives Matters and Lindsey Graham, hallelujah, they're together again.
Only some Rhode Island drama
for
you. What's going on in the Democrat Party in Rhode Island? Lindsey Graham, you know, and he was vaccinated, catching that virus.
Yep.
And we've been talking with, well, quite a few people on the text line this morning, and had that story earlier from Brendan Kirby at Fox 10, where he spoke with the administrator of, was it Infirmary?
Infirmary Health, yes.
So at Infirmary Health, as of, you know, whenever Brendan got this story done yesterday or the day prior, at some point, with 137 COVID patients at Infirmary, 1 in 5, 20%, according to the administrator there, were vaccinated and in the hospital with COVID. And so, you know, you do the math there. If there were 137 and 1 in 5, then you're looking at anywhere from, you know, 26 to 28 that vaccinated people that were in the hospital because of COVID, I'm guessing because of COVID. And there's been some back and forth this morning with Billy on the text line, Billy the Friendly Democrat, and he said that doesn't consider all the people that got the shot, didn't get infected at all because of the shot, and then didn't have to go to the hospital at all. Why are you sowing doubt about vaccinations? Is it the ratings? And with the ratings line there, I sent the usual eye-rolling emoji for something like that because, you know, I mean, obviously we want ratings, but more than anything, we're just putting it down there the way we're seeing it and the way that so many Americans are, you know, trying to catch up and keep up with what's going on here. And the thing about the 1 in 5 there is you have the federal government who continues to trot out the line that it's extremely rare breakthrough infections.
Right.
And I even had some stats, but we also reported this morning that the CDC last week coming out and recommending masks for children 2 years of age through the 12th grade, and recommended masks for vaccinated and unvaccinated in high transmission areas, which according to their logic is 2/3 of the United States right now. They based that entire judgment on one study from Provincetown, Massachusetts, where there's a 70% vaccination rate there in that town. And there was a festival of some sorts that they based all this on, where they found that, what was the percentage they said of vaccinated people who, it was like around 80% or something like that.
That they were vaccinated.
Yeah.
I find that hard to believe, because so many of the people at that festival or whatever it was were younger people.
Right.
I don't know that, there's a good percentage of people in Boston in that area that have gotten vaccinated. I would think that the holdouts are not the ones who were at that festival. So their numbers were saying that a lot of these people had been vaccinated, which I would find hard to believe that many young people would get vaccinated. So anyway.
Yeah, and even if...
A lot of this is flawed.
Exactly, and that's the issue, is even if that's a completely accurate study, so many scientists are pointing out, it's not peer-reviewed. It hasn't really been put to the test, but we're seeing from the CDC the same
mandates.
Thing we saw last year, exactly, where they're changing the course of business in America. And they're changing the course of, youth growing up in America based on one study that may or may not be flawed. And we're just fine with the CDC doing this all over again.
Yeah, we're not fine. And we're seeing that on the text line. We're seeing it with the phone calls. We're seeing it with our conversation right now. Right?
Yeah.
So how about now New York City? They're the first to do this. Residents and visitors are going to be required to show proof of vaccination for indoor dining, gyms, shows. This is what Mayor de Blasio said on Tuesday. The mayor is calling the city's vaccine passport the key to NYC pass. Wow. He says, this is a miraculous place, literally filled with wonders. If you're vaccinated, that's going to open up to you. You can open the door. If you're unvaccinated, you will not be able to participate in many things. It's time for people to see vaccination as necessary to living a good, full, and healthy life. De Blasio said New York City is the first in the nation to take this approach. It'll launch August 16th, and enforcement starts September the 13th.
Hmm.
How about that?
That's something else. Meanwhile, in Alabama, it seems like the push for vaccinations will come from, well, a screaming Governor Ivey, mm-hmm. but also just the businesses in the state. And I think nationally that's probably the route that is being taken and will be taken, is private employers mandating vaccinations for their employees.
I'm seeing a lot more of that now, and we have a local twist on that, don't we?
Yeah, we certainly do. So Steve Marshall, the Attorney General, came out yesterday and issued some more guidance regarding the state's vaccine passport law. And he said two main things. Schools are not allowed to require that students show that they're vaccinated, but employees or employers are allowed to ask their employees to get vaccinated. Hmm. And yesterday, the big news was that Tyson Foods, of course, remember all the shutdowns in these chicken plants and meat packing plants last year?
They were just all hot spots. They were the thing about those too, Dalton. A lot of those workers in those plants also lived.
Yeah.
Like at the same trailer park. Mm-hmm. Or it was
low-income work.
Migrants.
Hard work, yeah.
A lot of them were of that ilk. And they not only they socialized together, they worked together in very tight conditions.
Yeah, yeah. No doubt. Well, there's two major points for Tyson Foods in Alabama. You have one in Albertville and one in Bluntsville. But that company announced that they're requiring all of their employees to be vaccinated by October 1st. Then you have Ascension, which runs Providence Hospital in Mobile and the St. Vincent's Hospitals in Birmingham. They're requiring their staff to get vaccinated by November 12th. Also, I think Walmart might have a mask mandate put in now, and I think McDonald's did as well. But you look at the two largest private employers in America, and I think it's Walmart and Amazon. And if they're next to require vaccinations, and put on top of that, the federal employees that are now required to get vaccinated unless they want to be tested constantly, it looks like employers will be the main driver of the vaccination rate, not politicians telling everyone they're stupid and they're the reason that everything's, going bad again.
Look, if Governor Ivey called me stupid, I would say, you got a point.
Yeah.
But how about she changed her tone anyway with the Governor Ivey and Dr. Harris Variety Hour,
mm-hmm.
which was online beginning yesterday, I think.
Yeah, Dr. Ivey and Scott Harris, Governor Ivey and Dr. Scott Harris Variety Hour. I don't know if they thought they were changing minds. Who do you think watched that and went,
oh,
you know,
wow.
I think maybe I ought to go out and get vaccinated.
Now I see your point.
Governor Ivey sit down at this table, and she has these note cards in front of her. And then you have the top state doc, Scott Harris, sitting across from her. And she's like, I'm going to naturally ask you questions off of this note card now. You hear? And they go back and forth. I wish I could find the audio that I had yesterday where they're a little back and forth. And Scott Harris flips it on Governor Ivey. He starts asking her questions.
He went off script, and it threw her a little bit.
It was like a masterclass in improv. But we'll try to find that variety hour and play that audio before the end of the show.
Very good.
She went off script a little bit there.
17 after 8 o'clock, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, FM Talk 106.5. Hey, feel free to call us. Anything we're talking about interests you. You got a take on something. And it doesn't have to just be about COVID-19. What's up, y'all? 343-0106.
Social scores. How America is becoming more like China because of Twitter and Facebook and Instagram. Yeah, you're going to want to hear this when we get back.
On the way next, Dan Brennan, Dalton Orwig, and Mobile Mornings. Morning from Dan and Dalton, 823 FM Talk 106.5. 343-0106. If you want to give us a call, feel free. Also, that's the text line. Dalton does a much better job at nearly everything, including looking over the text line.
And some of us are readers.
I don't know why I guess it's, you know, your hands are free.
Yeah.
I'm
kind of. You're running the show.
Operating a little over here.
It's also probably generational.
JD is he's in there, Mobile or Baldwin County. What's up, buddy?
Hey there, JD.
Yeah.
Yes,
how
sir.
You doing?
Good.
I had a question.
Yeah,
so
what you got?
Baldwin County has satellite courthouses. I wonder why they can't do something like that in Mobile. Prospective jurors have to go over to the Civic Center and get weeded out or whatever and then go to the courthouse. Does everything have to go on at the courthouse? They have ballrooms at the Civic Center.
Right.
Couldn't they use something like that over there, you know, for district court or something at least?
And that's what the district attorney's brought up in the past. She said, you know, we've got all these massive rooms that are used for Mardi Gras balls and other things. Why can't we just space everyone out and hold the trials there? But apparently Judge Young Peter, he's set in his ways here with this pandemic.
Well, you know what's going to happen if they keep prolonging this. The defense attorneys are going to start saying, well, you're going to have to release them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, and that's kind of what they're doing right now. I mean, there's no reason to plead guilty. It's just these trials are going to drag on and on. She said yesterday that some of these families won't see justice for 3 to 4 years.
Crazy.
From now.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Thanks for the call, JD.
The police department always says you need to speak up and let it be known if you see something. You know, if you see something, say something. And all this, they want the public to get active and involved. Sounds like they need to get involved.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's like, get involved for what?
Yeah.
Because if these cases never go to trial for years, that's insane.
It's very insane. And, you know, there's two people to be really concerned about with this. Well, more than that. But first off, the families who have had someone severely injured or murdered or done wrong by someone else who have to wait and wait and wait and not know whether the assailant will get out for free or, you know, they just have no idea what the future holds because these trials are being extended for so long. But then what about, you know, not everyone is guilty that gets arrested.
No, you're right. I mean, that's why you have the trial.
Yeah.
To maybe exonerate somebody.
So think about somebody who's like completely innocent that has been waiting on trial for however long. Hmm. And then, that's some tough stuff. And the district attorney's been out and talking about that for a while now.
There's a story you alluded to.
I wanted to get somebody's take on this because I started reading this last night and I'm like, yeah, I could see that happening here. So this is from, it's an opinion piece on The Hill by Kristen Tate. And headline, Coming Soon, America's Own Social Credit System. And Tate starts by writing, the new domestic war on terror kicked off by the riot on January 6th has prompted several web giants to unveil predecessors to what effectively could become a soft social credit system by the end of the decade, relying on an indirect hand from the lawmakers in D.C., our social betters in corporate America will attempt to force the most profound changes our society has seen during the internet era. So what is a social credit system? Well, it's something that is already being run in China. She writes, China's social credit system is a combination of government and business surveillance that gives citizens a score that can restrict the ability of individuals to take actions like purchasing plane tickets, acquiring property, taking loans, all because of their behaviors, which is all logged online. So in China, you have, of course, such a tight relationship between the business and the economy. I mean, the government and the economy, that they have eyes on citizens of China, you know, 24/7, 365, and they're basically given a rating, like an Uber driver or...
Like you're a good citizen or a bad citizen.
Yeah, or a player on a video game.
How would it work here? What are we being judged on?
So we're heading here. She says, given the position of several major American companies, a similar system may be coming here sooner than you think. Last week, PayPal announced a partnership with the Southern Poverty Law Center, referred to here by the opinion editor as a far left-wing group, which they are. PayPal announced a partnership with SPLC to investigate the role of white supremacists and propagators of anti-government rhetoric, subjective labels that potentially could impact a large number of groups or people using their service. PayPal says the collected information will be shared with other financial firms and politicians. Facebook, taking similar measures, recently introducing messages that ask users to snitch on their potentially extremist friends, which, considering the platform's bias, seems mainly to target the political right.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, Facebook and Microsoft are working with several other web giants and the United Nations on a database to block potential extremist content. So in the name of the domestic war on terror, which is what's being referred to now, they keep talking about white supremacists mm-hmm. are the biggest danger to America since, you know, whatever.
Well,
name a date and time.
Always have been.
Yeah. And so using that rhetoric, you now have, I mean, think of how much of your life, and it's different for everybody, how much of your life is done online now.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever, you know, whenever my wife and I would go out of town and we'd have somebody take care of the dog, we'd get back, PayPal them money. Go out to get some beers with somebody and I want to split the tab with them, I'll just Venmo them or PayPal them money. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter. Well, going forward, more and more of our lives will be lived online, whether we like it or not.
And you'll be judged by the way you live.
And yeah.
That
and
data will give you an acceptable score or an unacceptable score.
Exactly.
Judged by who? Right.
Well, the PayPals, the mm-hmm. Facebooks, the Twitter, who are linking up with groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center, who can basically then dictate, you know, what happens in your social life personally. Like, you want to buy tickets to go see Alabama play?
Nope.
Well, yeah, if you've said something offensive online, you might not be going this year.
Wow. Wow. Coming our way?
Yeah, I think it might be.
Why somebody decided to get vaccinated after all this time? That is on the way on FM Talk 106.5.
Now on FM Talk 106.5, coming back to the phone lines and text lines and talkback lines in just a minute. First, I want to talk with Louis Arata at McConnell Automotive. Hey, Louis.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Hey, doing great here at the palatial FM Talk 106.5 studios, but enough of us. I want to know what's going on in McConnell.
Well, I just got outside. It's kind of nice outside. Y'all come check all these fine rides out on the lot out there. I mean, we're just sitting here. Or if you don't want to do that, think about it. Go online, McConnellAutomotive.com. We got some great pictures up there, and we're trading stuff in every day. So if you don't see anything you like, just come back the next day. You probably got some. Like I said the other day, we have got a great selection of used Yukons and Tahoes. So I think we sent an email blast out. We've been buying them off the street, and we keep on getting a truckload of trucks. I mean, that's kind of goofy, but we get a bunch of trucks in just about every day now, but they're all just about sold. So you might want to give them a call, make sure they can what's sold and what's not. We got some AT4s mm-hmm. coming in. I saw one come in yesterday, and I don't think it's sold. It's gray. So just give them a call, 251-476-4141.
You know, I love those AT4s, just a number of the vehicles on the lot at McConnell that have caught my eye. Louis, we appreciate your time this morning.
Hey, thank y'all.
That's Louis Arata. Go see him at McConnell on Dolphin Street, just east of I-65. You'll also find them on the internet at McConnellAutomotive.com. That easy to find. 837 FM Talk 106.5 and Mobile Mornings rolls on.
Yes, rolling on back on the phone line now at 837. And we have got, I believe Marshall is on the line right now.
Hey, Marshall.
How you doing this morning?
Doing great.
Doing all right. What do you got for us?
I drive a truck, an 18-wheeler, and I come in and out of Florida all the time down the I-10 corridor. Ever since that last storm, it might have been Sally that tore up there to Spanish Fort and whatnot. Our Alabama state sign has been laying on the ground.
Mm.
And it's been quite a while now, and it's not good. I don't think it's good for our commerce. We got people coming in and out to do business in our state.
Yeah.
And to see that we can't even put up a sign.
Is that?
It's got like, I guess it's got like the weather breakaways that allows the sign just to lay down so it don't destroy the sign. All they got to do is stand it back up, put new brackets on it.
Right.
And I just can't understand why we can't take care of our welcome sign. We get so many tourists that come in and want to get a picture with the Sweet Home Alabama, and it's laying on the ground. That says a lot about our infrastructure.
It does. So are you talking about the Welcome to Alabama sign westbound on 10 into Alabama?
Yeah, you come right past that. You come out of Florida, and they got this beautiful thing. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you for visiting Florida, and you come to Alabama, and all you see is yellow caution tape on our sign laying on the ground, and it's been that way for quite some time.
That's an interesting point. Now, if Bucky's sign blew over, they'd put it back up, don't you think?
It'd be the next day.
The customers are so in love with Bucky's, they'd get out there and put the sign back up if they had to. Yeah, and that's, Marshall, there's something similar, you know, over here to our station. Maybe someone could correct me, but the I-10 sign that says, I think, Florida exit 2 miles or whatever, that sits above the Cottage Hill, if you could get on 65 from Cottage Hill, the sign is right there.
Yeah.
And I think it's still bent over, too.
I think it is. Yeah. I think you can see it on the overpass.
And while we're talking about signs, I thought that after elections that all signs were supposed to be removed. I see all kinds of political signs up and down I-65 going to Montgomery.
Well,
even to it's just... They're still along the side of the highway.
Yeah, you do have the municipal election. So one thing, if there's still Trump-Biden signs out there, but you do have a lot of local races coming up.
Oh, there's Tupperville. I mean, these are all back from the 2016, some of them.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marshall.
All right, and y'all have a great day.
Thanks, Marshall. Giving us a check-in from the road there. So the Welcome to Alabama sign still waylaid from Sally.
So basically what it's, if you want to read into it, you're not welcome.
No.
Well, you're not welcome in Alabama.
Actually, it's not a bad idea to put that on the signs. Let's go back to the lines here. Dr. Lou, is that who we have on the line here? Hey, morning, Dr. Lou.
I appreciate your time here.
We're having trouble hearing you.
Okay. You know what? I'm on the road.
Okay.
Let me call back tomorrow.
All right. Dr. Lou, going to give us a call tomorrow, I guess.
Pretty faint call
right
there.
Sure, some event coming up.
So
sure.
We checked on the talkback feature.
We did, yeah. And
pretty interesting.
Yeah, so we have a couple talkbacks here from this morning. And Keith, we were talking about vaccinations, and I had a buddy text me, a buddy who listens to the station text me the other day, and they were, his family were putting off, they're younger, mm-hmm. a little older than me, about my age, really,
yeah.
Young family, and they had put off getting vaccinated because, you know, they're young, maybe looking to have more children, just like so many people who have made that decision. And really for them, I'd have to find out, you know, exactly what it was that pushed them to get vaccinated now. But they do not seem to be alone. I think a lot more younger people that were going to wait as long as possible, see if COVID had really died out, and maybe you can get away without getting vaccinated. A lot more people are making that decision now to go out and get vaccinated. And I think that's what Keith had to say. Let's see. Let's run that from Keith on the talkback function earlier today.
Okay, so I'm going to finally do it. I'm going to get the Pfizer vaccine, the first shot, at 2 o'clock today at CVS in Baymanette. I had said that I wasn't going to take it, but I hope everybody else does. One of those sort of things. But I sort of have grown a distrust for our government. But I think Israel, I don't know if they required it, but they have a 100% vaccination rate on the Pfizer shot. And I love those folks, and they're some of the smartest on the planet, and if they say it's okay, then it's okay. So I'm going to take it today, and I appreciate all the discussion you guys have had.
So there you go. That's Keith leaving us a message earlier on the voicemail app.
Interesting, the motivation for him to get the vaccination was, well, he's probably, you know, he's concerned. He doesn't necessarily trust our government, made that clear, but he trusts Israel.
Yeah.
And so I would like to see what the, if the vaccination rate in Israel is near 100%, what do the COVID cases look like? Mm-hmm. Or are they all...
I'll have to pull that up.
Are they all gone? Because, but that was his main... that's what I took away from it, was if it wasn't for Israel and their evidence, he would still not have the vaccination. And it still hasn't. It's 2 o'clock this afternoon.
You got to say that that's a better test case than using one specific event out of Provincetown, Massachusetts.
I agree.
As reason to, you know, change everything back to the way it was last year, which is exactly what the CDC did. And really, and Jeff has been, I mean, we've all been talking about this over the last few days, but I think Jeff Poor has been particularly spot on in regards to the government trying to accomplish something. It's never pretty. And the higher up you get in government, the worse the planning and the worse everything is. And especially with everything being as politicized as it is now. And when this was the Trump vaccine, Democrats didn't want a part of it. After it, after Trump was out of office and it became the Biden vaccine, then Republicans didn't want any of it. Or at least that's what's been sold to the American people through the media. I don't think it's necessarily that clear cut.
I don't think it is either. And I think there's a racial component to this as well, with people who don't trust vaccines for some, pretty good reason. There's that. And so when you consider the fact that the city of Mobile is about 50-50 split down the middle between a Caucasian and black, that, you have to factor that in as well.
Yeah, and think about our culture now as Americans in general, you know, black, white, Mexican, whatever your race or skin tone may be. We've become a very passive people, and a lot of times to the detriment. Like, how many videos have you seen over the last few years where someone's being robbed or beaten up, and everyone around, their first instinct is to record it or point and laugh rather than jump in and get it done yourself? We are a people now who do not take the initiative. It's a low rate, the number of people in America who say, listen, what's happening right now is wrong, and I'm going to go out and I'm going to fix this. We're people who would rather wait for the groundskeeper to come by and pick up a piece of trash and toss it away than get out and do it ourselves.
Or not litter in the first place.
Or and so I think a lot of people were saying, hey, I don't know about this vaccine. Maybe if enough, just like Keith said, maybe if enough other people take the vaccine, we'll get out of this whole mess and I won't have to get vaccinated at all.
That was the way he admitted that was pretty cool. Like, I was hoping everybody else would get it.
And now we're at the point where I think a lot of folks are making the same decision as Keith.
Agree. 845 FM Talk 106.5. Jeff Poor is on the way, and he will join us in our final segment on Mobile Mornings.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority, and Dr. Bill Williams.
The Gulf Coast can expect mostly sunny skies today with a few afternoon thunderstorms. High temperatures will be in the lower 90s. Tonight, partly cloudy, lows in the lower 70s. And then tomorrow, mostly sunny with just isolated afternoon thunderstorms and high temperatures in the lower 90s. This is meteorologist Dr. Bill Williams for FM Talk 106.5.
FM Talk 106.5, the Gulf Coast Weather Authority.
I'm Bill Wiles, WKRG News 5. A crime alert as Pritchard police search for a suspect in a homicide. A man was found shot to death on Handy L. Davis Street at about 6:30 last night. He had been shot several times. Police are looking for a 2011 or 2012 black Honda Pilot that may be tied to the crime. If you have any information, you're asked to contact Pritchard police. Theodore High School football coach and athletic director Eric Collier now has a trial date for his alleged involvement in a brawl Mother's Day weekend. He and three family members are charged with misdemeanor assault.
Police say the Colliers had a heated argument with some people at Dauphin Island and then attacked them when they docked in Bayou LaBatrie. The alleged victims were kicked, punched, and held underwater. Collier's trial has been set for October 6. You can look for Donald Trump to be back in Alabama later this month. The New York Post is reporting the former president will be making a stop in Coleman for a Save America rally Saturday, August 21st at York Family Farms. It's part of the Alabama Republican Party summer meeting. I'm Bill Riles, WKRG News 5.
I struggle with sleep. I've been taking sleeping pills every night for 10 years. I knew I needed to stop. It's associated with early onset dementia. But fast forward 3 months and I've completely stopped with the pills and only use Simply CBD's natural products. If sleep is tough for you like it was for me, then Simply CBD's your solution. I'm Andrew, I'm 47, and I can sleep again.
Simply CBD, located on Highway 98 in Daphne and on Airport in the Yester Oaks Shopping Center in Mobile.
As an independent business owner, husband, and the father of two young girls, I am invested in Mobile and committed to its future. I'd be honored to have your support on August 24th to replace John Williams on the Mobile City Council. I'll focus on making Mobile a safer place to live, a better place to work, and a more enjoyable place to play. Please vote Ben Reynolds for District 4 on August 24th and visit our website, reynoldsformobile.com, for more information.
Paid for by Reynolds for Mobile campaign.
Hey, my friend Sid Sexton back in studio. Sid, I saw a video with you discussing the career ladder with Sexton Lawn and Landscape the other day. It's pretty compelling. Talk to me about that.
Well, that's really what our whole organization is about from the top down. Myself and all of our management level, we're all about bringing people into this industry and helping them be successful. So if they don't have any experience or they do have some experience, our whole goal is to take those folks and help them create a career out of the landscape industry. So they don't have to work in a cubicle. They don't have to work in a factory. They're outside, they're working with their hands, and they're working with a real team. I just truly believe people want to be a part of something greater than themselves and part of a team, and that's how we formed our whole organization.
I tell you what, it shows as a customer of y'all's, it shows with the people that show up at our house. So talk to them if they want to get in touch with you about that career. How do they do it?
Well, you can find us online. We've got a career page there, sextonlandscapes.com, or you can come by and see us in Daphne, County Road 64. You can give us a call as well at 251-626-3309.
Damn the torpedoes and full speed ahead. It's time for the 19th annual Mystic Stripers Family Fishing Rodeo Saturday, August 14th at Dauphin Island Marina. Fish in 16 different inshore or offshore categories. Plus, cash jackpots pay for king mackerel and speckled trout with thousands of dollars in door prizes and the Mystic Angler cash drawings of $100, $200, and $250. Tickets still only $25. Kids tickets 12 and under $10 with prizes for croaker, hard-headed catfish, and white trout supplied by Bass Pro Shops. The Mystic Stripers proudly donate 20% of the king mackerel and speckled trout jackpots, plus matching funds from the organization to St. Jude's Children's Hospital. For tournament details, ticket outlets, or to buy tickets, visit msrodeo.com or find them on Facebook and Twitter at MSSRodeo. The Mystic Stripers Family Fishing Rodeo, Saturday, August 14th at Dauphin Island Marina, sponsored by Bass Pro Shops, Mobile Appliance, L&M Tires, Smith Electric, Greer's, Dennis Langen Construction, Don's Heating and Air, Judy's Place, Butch Cassidy's, Pop's Mardi Gras Store, and Bachelor's Heating and Air.
From the spring of Toyota.com, traffic center, airport, South University, that accident without injuries now moved out of the roadway. Traveling downtown, George Wallace, Bankhead Tunnel still clear. No problems across the Bayway or the Causeway to the Eastern Shore. At Premier Medical, with four offices to serve you in Mobile and Daphne, they have 33 of the region's best doctors for all your eye, ear, nose, and throat care needs. With over 100 years of serving the Gulf Coast, Premier Medical is committed to providing the highest quality care to children and adults at pmg.md. And I'm Kane with your FM Talk 106.5 traffic.
Morning from Dan and Dalton, FM Talk 106.5. The show is Mobile Mornings. And the show that follows ours is Jeff Poore.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And it is a Wednesday, and Jeff joins us on the line a little early for his show. Hey, Jeff.
Good morning. Thanks for having me on.
So, one of the conversations we were having this last segment, Marshall called in. He drives a truck around the state, drives into Florida and back often. And he said it must have been from Sally, Hurricane Sally of last year, that the Welcome to Alabama sign, as you enter Alabama westbound on I-10 from Florida, that it's still bent in half, like one of the breakaway signs from when it gets really windy out there. And I've seen, one at Cottage Hill in 65, and it seems like a lot of people still haven't picked up from the storm. You travel a lot around the state, but you travel between Florida and Alabama pretty often, too. Have you noticed a lot of signs and things still down from the storms last year?
My favorite is the Rebuild Alabama sign. It's all beat out of shape. But, no, I have noticed that. I ALDOT is one of these confounding bureaucracies, and, they are not very good at signs. Let me just tell you this, guys. Drive around this state and do spell check on some signs.
Really?
Sometime.
Wow.
Do some they misspelled names of towns. They used an inappropriate sign. Say it's a U.S. highway, like U.S. Highway 45. Well, it's a state highway. You have the map. They'll sometimes get those mixed up. There's just all these things that ALDOT does that I think is a broader incompetency that we never, the layman doesn't maybe recognize.
So all those interstate signs look the same from state to state, I do believe anyway. In my travels, it's, you know what I'm saying? They have the same font. They've got the same information on them, basically. You know, it could be Detroit, 8 miles straight ahead, whatever. So, is ALDOT involved with that signage? It looks like it's all for interstate federal highways.
Well, yeah, they are, because they are very similar in their mandates. There's a governmental agency. I don't think it's really directly government that writes all the standards for highway signs, mm-hmm. and they're supposed to look a certain way. Back in the 90s, Florida, you did this thing with their U.S. highways where they were Kodachrome. They had colors, and the federal government said, "Well, that's not up to standard. If you don't change your signs, we're going to stop giving you funding for your highways." So Florida had to change all of their highway signs. There is a standard that you have to meet to get federal funding. And a lot of times, though John Cooper and ALDOT will talk a big game about this, they don't always you see screw-ups all over the state of Alabama. I can think of like four or five off the top of my head. But like they don't do that, but they'll make a big deal about having to, you know, if it costs $1 billion to raise the Bayway 3 feet or whatever, that's the one we're going to adhere to.
Yeah. So real quick, this is the last on signs. Up at the Auburn exit, I don't know if it's still there, but at one time they had the Auburn logo
on the exit sign.
Remember that, Jeff? Do you recall
that? Yeah. I remember when they did that. I think that is okay. But you have to, when you do the highway number signs, mm-hmm. so like 98, 90, 45, 43, you have to do them a certain way. Now, the states can do whatever they want to with their signs. Like 163 is Dolphin Island Parkway. You know, this is map of Alabama with the number in the middle. But for the U.S. highways, what they will do sometimes is they'll accidentally put that map of Alabama sign to make it look like a state highway.
Right.
With the number on it, and they screw that up. There's probably at least a dozen places all around the state of Alabama where that's the case. But the broader point is, like, the misspellings and the signs just knocked down. And like you said, this is goes back to the hurricane. Why haven't they fixed this yet? What is going on at the Alabama Department of Transportation where they can't do these little minor cosmetic things right?
You know, I was joking last year during the storm season because I have such a poor memory. We had one storm going one way, and then like a little later we had a tropical storm or something that came through blowing wind the other way, and I jokingly said maybe some of those trees that are leaning after that first storm will be blown back to the upright
yeah.
this next storm, and that actually happened. So maybe ALDOT is just hoping,
waiting on the wind to blow the other way.
They're just hoping the next big storm is blowing it the other way and makes their work easier for them. Well, you know, speaking of roadways, more bridge drama here. And today I'm looking forward to your interview with Tony Kennan, of course, the mayor of Orange Beach, and a bit of a back and forth now between Kennan and Robert Kraft, the mayor of Gulf Shores. We've had a lot of bridge talk on this station over the last 5-10 years, but this is regarding another bridge and some drama there.
Yeah, so, and this has been going on a few years. Those of you that go to Orange Beach or Gulf Shores, that you know the challenges of getting across the intercoastal waterway to the beaches there. There's the toll bridge that's been there for about 20 years or so. There's another bridge, the longstanding Highway 59 bridge. There are people that want a third bridge. Mm-hmm. There's a Wolf Bay proposal. There's a bunch of different proposals to add another bridge. Now, they're constrained by a state park and certain restrictions that would prevent a bridge somewhere being put in the middle, such as it is. That is the debate. The Gulf Shores mayor wants a new bridge. Tony Kennan says, well, let's talk to these guys that are doing the toll bridge and see if we can work out a better deal to get more people on and off the island with that. And that has the two mayors of those two municipalities kind of at odds with one another right now.
Orange Beach gets some of that toll money. Is that the crux of the matter?
Well, no, I don't think that's it. I think that the idea is the Orange Beach, the toll bridge is closer to Orange Beach.
Right.
So if you can work out a way to get more public money to that bridge,
it
would lower that toll and make it easier for people in Tony Kennan's municipality to get off the island, whereas the mayor of Gulf Shores thinks you need another bridge. That 59 bridge is always tied up. It's aging. It's going to have to be replaced eventually.
Right.
So I think it's a matter of geography when it comes down to it.
I'll be honest. You know, since they put that toll in, I paid it accidentally the first time I drove down there just because I wasn't sure where the toll booth was. Since then, you know, I do like so many others, and I just cut across. And even if you're staying in Orange Beach, you can cut over and then work your way back down on the Beach Boulevard. I guess, are people still, are they paying that toll? I mean, I feel like I sound bad here because I'm cheating the state out of some money, but
no, you're doing all right.
Who all's paying that
toll?
Just
being wily.
Just people going to the wharf or what, Jeff?
That's what I assume that there is. I mean, people, a lot of people from out of town pay it.
Yeah.
They don't know. I mean, they do this. And you could go all along the Florida Gulf Coast. We lived in Destin. There was the Mid Bay Bridge. There's the one going into Pensacola. There's the Garcon Point Bridge. It just seems to be the trend now for private companies to put these bridges up and you know, make money. But then it gets to a point where these places are growing so much, so fast. The Gulf Coast is growing so fast that these mayors are looking for ways to incorporate. They become reliant upon these toll bridges. The best example, guys, that bridge over there in Pensacola that got wiped out going over to Gulf Breeze, they had to rely on the private toll bridge. And that's the governor of the state of Florida is trying to work out a deal where the state can buy another bridge from one of these toll companies. So it looks like a good investment, and that's kind of what's going on here.
Okay, Jeff's got more on that on the way with Tony Kennan. That's in the 10 o'clock hour on FM Talk 106.5.